Well, welcome to the show. Man, is it crowded outside? Jesus, pandemic? What pandemic? There's so many people outside. My first guest can tell you the same thing. He just drove in from Schaumburg to be on the show. His name is John Good, and I'm holding in my hands his first novel, Blood on the Badge. It has taken him some time to write this novel. He's done it after 40 years in law enforcement, John, is that right?
41 years, my friend.
41, you count every time.
4.5 years with Romeoville, and the past 37 with the Village of Glenview.
And in what different roles? I mean, a lot of people say, oh, he's a cop, but there are a lot of different kinds of police officers.
I was fortunate that we diversified enough that I did everything from the street to plainclothes to evidence technician, field training officer, but the thing I enjoyed the most was 1985 through 90. I'm a lot older than I look.
Here you are.
And I was officer friendly. And we did a lot of community relations, crime prevention. I won an award for that from the Village of Glenview.
How bad was crime? I'm a Chicago kid. I've always loved Glenview, but how bad was crime in Glenview?
The misconception is that
the suburbs are safe.
They're safe. But while they're safe, there's also people who move out there living under that pretense and like, well, I don't have to lock my car door. I don't have to lock my home.
Yeah.
I took a call where a woman's home was a rarity, was broken into when she was out for a jog. And when she came home and I talked to her, she's like, well, why did I move here from Chicago if it's so unsafe? We are safe. Glenview is one of the safest communities in the entire North Shore.
Yeah.
But if you're going to not lock your home, your car, give strangers information on the phone, personal information, there's very, very little.
You know, as you told me, you grew up in Chicago and attended Gordon, the late, great Gordon Tech, now DePaul Academy or whatever it is on Addison near Lane Tech. When did you get it in your head? You wanted to be a football player, right, when you were young?
I wanted to play for Gordon. had a great arm, could throw, like, yeah. You know. But at 5'11". And 142 pounds.
You get killed out there, yeah.
The coach goes, John, I can't have you play. It's just too dangerous
and
for
then
you to play.
And then you immediately say, well, okay, I can't play football, so I'm going to become a police officer? I
mean, somewhere down the road, right around...
in college.
You know, when I graduated, I went to Wilbur Wright Junior College
sure.
in Chicago, took a couple of law enforcement courses,
and
really, really enjoyed... they brought in specialized instructors, and I fell in love with that. And then when I made a trip down to Western Illinois University to visit a few classmates from Gordon, is when I saw the campus and I said, you know what? This is for me. This
wow.
is a career.
And there
in law
you
enforcement.
Studied. You studied and got a degree in.
I have my bachelor's in law enforcement administration, and a number of people are like, do you really need a degree to be a cop? Yeah.
I think it probably helps, doesn't it?
Anything that you can pick up to make you a better police officer.
Was there any notion early on to join the Chicago Police Department?
The woman who I eventually had married told me at the time
no.
She
said no.
She goes, anywhere else you want to go. But at that time she was no, I can't marry you if you're going to go to Chicago.
Which she was afraid.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this is way back years ago.
Sure.
So I wound up in Romeoville for 4.5 years.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, I saw an opening for Glenview, took the application, took the test.
Did you have to live in the suburb in order to work for the police department?
No. Glenview is very fortunate, like a lot of other communities.
Yeah.
We have officers living wherever.
Elsewhere.
As long as they can get to work on time, then we're fine.
You seem, John Good got here very early, and we've been able to talk before the show. You seem to have no regrets. You enjoyed working as a police officer, did you not?
I did for a number of different reasons.
What are they?
And the biggest one is, again, the interaction with the public.
Yeah.
I think every officer wants to make an impact one way or the other.
Sure.
Whether make a number of DUI arrests or just, and again, getting back to the officer-friendly days, you know, those were 5 great years they got to spend interacting with the kids during the day.
Yeah.
And then we did neighborhood watch at night. Mm. We did a number of other things as well. I say we, which only I.
What you did then was sort of form, as Chicago is desperate to do, a relationship between the police and the public.
Yes.
Because now you look at the city of Chicago and that there is no relationship between the police and the public.
I can't comment on that.
Yeah. Well, I will. there is no relationship between them. So you ever pull a gun?
Had the weapon out. Fortunately, I never had to use it.
Good. That's a misconception about police. Don't you think that I learned long ago that most police officers, even lifelong police officers, never have to shoot, and most of them never have to pull their weapon.
The vast majority.
Yeah.
I'm going to say probably as high as 80%.
Yeah.
Will never fire their weapon.
Wow.
Other than using it on the range and being certified.
Well, you obviously, John Good, picked up a lot of interesting stories on your way. Many of them are in here fictionalized because this is a novel. They're fictionalized. The suburb of Glenview is not in here, but fictionalized.
Mm-hmm.
Blood on the Badge is the name of John's book. It can be found in Amazon, Barnes & Noble, every other website. I know that there are not many bookstores open now, but I'm going to try to get him into Centuries and Sleuths. Are you listening, Augie? He'd be great at Centuries and Sleuths. The reason I read his book in the first place is it came with a very persuasive letter. I like the book very, very much. It's very cinematic, and it reads true. So after a short commercial break, I will tell John and you why I immediately read the book, getting this book and the letter. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back. I'm sitting here talking to my new friend, John Good, the author of, most recently, Blood on the Badge. It is indeed his first novel. I have to assume, John, that it was written, that you started this before retiring from the police force. You were a cop for 41 years. When did all of a sudden the notion of, hey, I'm going to write a novel, which is not an easy, as you've learned, is not an easy thing to do.
No, it's really a part-time job where, for those future writers out there, you better devote 30 to an hour every day. I've been in contact with a number of other writers who tell me, and that's our trade, is that it's a part-time job, and from this point to this point, every day, I am now no longer in my mind a former police officer. I am now a full-time author.
Wow, interesting.
A full-time author and part-time teacher.
What compelled you to sit down and start writing a story in the first place?
You know, I was reading a lot of Patricia Cromwell.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Joseph Wambach.
Sure.
New Centurions, Choir Boys, Black Marble.
Sure.
And
Joseph Wambach, yeah, famously a former Los Angeles cop, became a very, very big selling author.
And this is right in the prime of when I'm at Western Illinois University. So I'm thinking somewhere down the road, possibly near retirement, putting some things down. In 2009, I had the first two chapters down, and there was a book signing over in Skokie, and a famous author was at the book signing.
Who?
My lawyer and I have decided that, and we're going to keep him out of this for right now. But he doesn't write the same genre. He writes different things.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very rewarding for me. I went right in uniform, right from work.
Oh.
Make sure I didn't miss him.
Yeah.
I stand at the top of the escalator.
And make sure he didn't miss you either.
Yeah. Well, not in uniform.
Yeah,
and not
right.
6 feet tall. And he stopped his presentation, Rick, and he pointed at me and he goes, you know, I really admire first responders.
Wow.
I really admire law enforcement,
yeah,
fire, military. After everything was done, I sat down with him one-on-one, and I gave him my first chapter. And he looked, didn't even touch it. He pushed it back across the table at me and goes, I can't touch that. If I do, you can sue me for.
Yeah, right, right, right.
But what he gave me, my friend, is his business card and phone number.
Really?
And he said to me, you know how many of you I meet when I'm doing these?
Yeah.
700, DEA, ATF, FBI, local, state, municipal. But you're different. You know how many of those 800 have gotten a book done? One.
Yeah.
He goes, but you're going to get it done. And when you are, I'm going to publish your book.
Really?
And
wow.
I kept that card in front of my computer.
Yeah,
and that was my motivation. That was my carrot in front of the, you know, rabbit.
That's a good story.
I've got someone who can publish a book for me. You know how many people have no one out there? That's where they turn to self-publishing.
Yeah, sure.
And
well, another reason is that the publishing business is insane these days. I mean, there's nothing. There used to be. It used to be called vanity publishing when people would have to publish their own books. That's not really the case anymore, John. Believe me. So you put it together, and I must tell you, it's a very compelling read. It reads for anybody who's from the Chicago area. There are places you will recognize, and it's about the. It's basically about a guy who sort of wants to ease his way into retirement, and life goes kind of crazy, doesn't it?
Again, the misconception that nothing happens on the North Shore.
Yeah.
So he retires as a Navy SEAL, takes up a home in Morton Grove with his beautiful wife, Kelly, who works at a fictional hospital near there. And they, you know, want to have a family.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, about a month or two before their probation period ends, a very, very close friend of his on the force, as you see in Chapter 1, is killed.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing starts to escalate and go from there.
When he is lucky, this is the first of a planned trilogy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of action in this book. There's a lot of true emotion in this book, too, John, I'll tell you.
I've had people contact me, and I don't want to give too much away.
No, don't.
But tell me that they've cried.
Yeah,
certain parts of the book, and one of them being my ex-wife.
Yeah,
you know, who has read the book, and
was she supportive throughout all this?
A lot of it took place after.
She's the one who made you become a cop in the suburbs and not in Chicago. I think that was a wise move on her part.
She is a very, very smart woman. She's a very smart businesswoman. She gave me two great kids. There's no doubt about it.
That's great.
And we still have a friendly relationship, which is. Very well received.
What did she think when she said, "Hey, honey, take out the garbage," and you said, "No, I'm writing a novel. Leave me alone."
The novel, really, again, very, very, very little done during the marriage because, again, when you've got two kids
and you're a guy and you're working,
and I was teaching at the time as well at the College DuPage, and then I wound up moving from College DuPage. First, it was Roosevelt. Then College DuPage, and now I've been with Oakton Community College for the past 9 years.
Teaching what?
Law enforcement, of course.
That seems like such a general term. How do you teach law enforcement?
There's specific courses.
Okay.
So criminal investigation, patrol tactics or patrol techniques, police operations, correctionals. Oakton has a well-diversified field of law enforcement courses. We only offer an associate degree at this time. But it's your way of getting into law enforcement and seeing if it's fitting for you. Of course, when you bring in a guest speaker, that only emphasizes and students club that.
Let me ask you, the as you look around the country in the last few years, you know, with the notion in many it was some civic idiots to defund the police. The police are under an incredible amount of pressure and public disdain. I certainly am not one of those people.
Thank you.
But those people who is that a worry of some of the people in your class, some of the young people who are thinking of a career in law enforcement, worrying about those kind of movements afoot in this country?
Yes. There's no doubt about it, because everyone wants the public support. And I still believe that a lot of the public does support law enforcement.
I do, too.
You know, in a number of different ways. It's just that, for whatever reason, the book I recommend to my students, and besides the one that obviously I'm here today for, is called The Profession by Bill Bratton, the former police commissioner of New York.
New York, yeah.
In Boston. And he really spells it out. And the job was as difficult when I started from day one. Mm-hmm. It's only became more difficult when you're dealing with, again, a lot of different social issues that take place right now that officers have to deal with. That the public, the best thing I encourage the public to do is most communities, Glenview being one of them, Schaumburg being another one, have citizen police academies. You need to go in and spend. Now, with COVID, it may be doing it more on Zoom.
Sure.
But you really get to interact with your community, find out about what they're looking at, what they promote. You know, when I was, again, back to the Officer Friendly days, we would do a neighborhood watch program. I keep saying they. I would do a neighborhood watch program, excuse me. And all the things that Glenview would give away, timers for your lights, watches that we would stop by and check your home that we're still doing when you're on vacation, all these different things for free, and just combining unity.
Well, what you're saying is what you did and what many, many police departments do across this land is make, try to make a collaborative relationship with the people in the community and not an adversarial relationship with the people in community, which I think is one of the things that's sparking this defund the police nonsense. I don't say nonsense.
I would encourage the public to find out more about where they live and what their police department offers for them.
That's a great idea.
I mean, you know, hey, stop by. You know,
walk
eat
in,
your pamphlet.
Say hi.
You
I live
to,
here.
You don't even have to walk in. Most community relations divisions that I'm aware of put stuff out on their webpage, and you can take advantage of it.
That's a really good idea. I'm going to keep John Good through the news just because I want to talk a little bit more about Blood on the Badge and the two people, and there are others too. Nobody writes a novel in a vacuum. People are there and to help. No novel gets published on its own, believe me. So please stay tuned. You'll get some news from my buddy Roger Badish, and then we'll continue on with John Good. Welcome back. I have a few more minutes with former law enforcement official, current law enforcement professor, and first-time novelist. His first novel is called Blood on the Badge. It is about a cop named Matt, former Navy SEAL named Matt O'Neill, his wife Kelly, and how they are getting involved with a lot of people dying. That's there may be a serial killer involved. It takes place sort of on the North Shore of Chicago. And two of my dearest friends in the whole world, Zay Smith, who is no longer with us, but in his time was a great reporter and a marvelously talented writer, and his then-wife, Susie Schultz, who runs the Museum of Broadcast Communications and is one of my dearest, dearest friends. They helped you out here, didn't they, John?
In so many different ways.
Yeah. The book is dedicated to Susie, and you say the next one will be dedicated to Zay.
It will be.
They helped you by taking the raw material that was first draft of the book.
So we had the first draft done, and I was dating a woman named Ella, who knew Susie. Introduced me to her at Thanksgiving, about year 2018, and I said, I'd be honored if you could look at that book, Susie. And she goes, well, busy, but okay. So January 2019, we meet in a little coffee shop. I'm under the impression that she's going to come in and go, oh, my God, you've got something
you're
here.
You're the greatest, writer in, writer in the world.
Next to the Bible, this is number one. And lo and behold.
That's not what she said, yeah.
She goes, you are a great writer. And then she handed me four pages of notes.
Wow.
And I go, what are these? And she goes, these are questions you have to.
This is how to fix your book.
This is what you need to do to make it really, really worthwhile. And in all fairness, she hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
She is really, as you know, you've met her. She's a dynamite.
She's a dynamo.
And it was not for her. I made the corrections that she did.
Yeah.
I did a lot of research in the area.
She helped sculpt the book.
She really, really helped the book, number one. That's why the book is dedicated to her.
Yep.
Number two, later on down the road, she introduced me to Zay. And Zay was in California roughly 2 or 3 weeks before
he died.
Passed,
yeah.
Trying marketing the book. And the feedback was, well, maybe not MGM or Paramount. Definitely Hulu, definitely Netflix material.
That's encouraging.
Yeah. I mean, hey, and
that's
again,
encouraging.
Just so I've been blessed to meet icons in the business, and you being the fourth icon.
No, I'm not doing anybody. You're nuts. Icon. The as I said before, the book is very, very cinematic, and any actor in Hollywood would like it to be Matt O'Neill, I'll tell you that. How are you doing on the second installment of this trilogy?
The second installment takes place. Its title will be Blood on the Coffin.
Mm-hmm.
As of now, I am a free agent. Everything is, you know, I have not signed a contract with anyone.
That's good.
So looking at a number of different possibilities, and a lot of it's going to take place, believe it or not, in Montana, where now we wind up in Montana.
What do you know about Montana?
My travel agent is booking, as we speak, this week, a trip to Montana.
You're going to go do research in Montana.
And that's why book number one, as corny as it may sound, was very popular, because a lot of people contacted me,
sure,
law enforcement, saying they could really get into.
No question.
They loved the chapter about the Cubs playing the White Sox.
Yeah.
They loved the chapter about, you know, different locations that they could actually picture and know that they've been to themselves.
Yeah. John, I wish you great luck in your career, your second career. You're still going to be a professor and a teacher of law enforcement, but you're not going to be an active police officer anymore. Now you're a novelist.
Now I'm a novelist.
And without COVID, you would have already been drawn into the very, very serious landscape of crime novelists in Chicago, and I can't wait for you to meet some of these people and them to meet you.
I'm looking forward to it.
John, safe travels back. John has to go back and grade some papers. Right?
We're doing a lot of stuff nowadays, like most campuses, like Oakton, Harper online. So I'm teaching a course online, and they're taking their quiz and getting their homework in today.
They still get grades. I don't care if it's online.
Every week they get grades.
John, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Rick, it's been fantastic.
To meet you and to read you, too.